Menace Nation, it's Menace Morning Time.
Wake 'em up.
I don't do the most, but I do a lot.
Tryna hide from the camera.
I'ma make a toast, cause we still alive.
I ain't going outside today.
No big.
Couldn't find our tick. So I'm drinking on Accutane.
I feel like Pac.
I'ma pull up my style. We gon' do a drive-by in the rain.
I shoot a shot. I'm coming in.
It is Friday, February 25th, the last Friday of February. If you ain't got your mind right for March, you better get ready. We got March Madness. It's also time to hit the grind, right? Those summer bodies are going to come out in about a month or two. You got to finish this thing off right. And if you ain't working, you better get working. That's all I got to tell you. Clean mind, clean heart, clean soul. Get your body right. Physical fitness, mental fitness, spiritual fitness, all of it. We are on a mission to better ourselves here at Menace to Sports. And Chris just got me all fired up. I don't know if you – I tried to pull a clip. I couldn't find it. Yeah. We didn't want to delay starting the show. But if, and I think it was actually even an old press conference. But it might
it was
not
2 years ago. Yeah, I think it was two years ago.
But it was a sergeant general in one of the military branches, I think the Army. And this motherfucker talked about – we don't want to see war. You don't want to see war. But I promise you one thing. If we do, someone else will be raising your sons and daughters. Like, oh, shit. That is the energy I'm here for.
Big USA in this bitch.
Well, we've lost that in this country the last 2 years. And maybe longer. It's probably been a long haul. But you look at what's went on with the COVID and all the transgender bullshit and the him, her, zer bullshit, all this other stuff that's going on. Like, what pronoun do you want to fucking be called? It's like, we have completely lost the fact that we're a badass fucking country. And all this shit that's going on in this world. Like, we can't lose that. Mm-hmm. We can't. And I'm not trying to get political, but I think the sanctions against Russia are great, but at some point you got to fucking lay the hammer down and let them know, like, we ain't tolerating this shit in our world. It's not happening.
That's what I'm saying, man.
It's disgusting to watch. I'm having to explain to my kids. I mean, this man, Putin, literally not this year gave a speech where he basically called Joseph Stalin soft and that said he gave Russian, you know, the Soviet Union society too much freedom. He killed 20 million people, more twice as many as Hitler. And he called him soft. Like, this is pure evil we're watching. And, anyone that disagrees, honestly, you can fuck off. So again, it's not the point of this show, but man, you got to be terrified. I watched a video this morning of a Russian tank driving down the street in Ukraine, and a civilian car was driving the opposite way, and the Russian tank just turned left and ran over the car and crippled it, crumbled it. The person certainly is dead. And you're like, what is this proof? Like, this, what are we doing? Freeing people. This is like keeping the peace. Like, just unbelievable. So
that shit's crazy, bro.
We have completely lost what we relearned in 2001 after 9/11, which is that we are a unified patriotic nation. That's some bad motherfuckers. That's what we are. And we've lost it. Now we're worried about fucking letting boys swim in girls swim meets and, you know, just like, doesn't matter, like, gender fluid, pansexual. My daughter told me that one of her friends is pansexual. I had to fucking look it up. Like, what the hell? You're 10. What do you mean? Like, the people in this world are so fucking stupid, bro.
I'm not getting canceled today, but Zach, bro, just know I'm fired up. I got it's the last Friday of Black History Month. I got the crown in the morning. You know, I'm thinking about running through a brick wall. I just hit a play here at West Akron. I'm about to pull up on Christian later today.
Oh, yeah. You better go to Planet Fitness and figure that shit out.
Yeah, man, I'm not going outside, man. I'm not going outside. I'm gonna wear a shirt that says "I'm Chris Drew," and the back's gonna say "In this bitch."
You should.
And I'm gonna set the. You know they have a lunk alarm at Planet Fitness.
No.
So it's like if you slam the weights too loud, they sound an alarm because it's like a judgment free zone. Or if like you grunt too loud when you lift your weights, I'm setting that lunk alarm the fuck off.
You should. Mm-hmm. You definitely should. I need to get you a not me T-shirt. That's what I need to get you. Bro, I wear it probably like once every other week, and every time people just laugh. They're like, even if they don't know who I am or what it's about, they just laugh. Like, no matter what happened, like, bro, not me, wasn't me.
I'm not the one.
Not me. The one.
Mm-hmm. But Zach, I want to get back to Buckeyes, man, because yesterday was a, I mean, for Buckeye basketball fans, as we kind of approach March Madness, a really cool day, really cool game. Ohio State was underdogs going in to, you know, play number 15 Illinois. EJ Liddell had the flu, had a flu game. He's from the state of Illinois, left the hospital, was warming up, felt good, and played. And him and MB scored a combined 52 points, and they upset Illinois. Huge, huge win for them.
Yeah, it was those two are just phenomenal, and it was you know, I'm not, as you know, I'm not a huge basketball fan, but I will watch the Buckeyes, and I think both of those kids are exceptional players, and that was awesome. It was awesome to see a flu game. I didn't know if you had any kind of symptom, you could play sports anymore. So it's kind of nice to know that we're getting back to real life, where if a kid's kind of doesn't feel great, but he thinks he can go, he can play, right? I doubt they even test anymore for COVID, because that ship has passed, right? And I did see the it's sports, college sports, man, nothing like it. I watched a thing Josh Pate put out about the whiteout at Penn State, and just how you will never find that in professional sports. That's why I have actually come around to like the NFL, but other than that, I'm not really a fan of any professional sport at all, because there's not that camaraderie. I mean, you look at that Illinois crowd. I mean, Chris Holtman's pissed at the fans. The fans are trashing EJ Liddell. Chris Holtman assaulted two assistant coaches by Michigan standards, right? He touched their elbow as he was shaking his hand. So in Wolverine country, he assaulted. He should be fired. He assaulted two assistant coaches. And be careful when you put your hands on someone, what might happen? Because he put his hands on two coaches. Right. The audacity. But
it's so funny, because the put your hands on it is like, it's like akin to like, oh, he asked for it. It's like, nobody asked for it. Just touched their elbow on the way by.
Right.
Put your hands on somebody. The crowd was screaming like EJ sucks, like all kinds of stuff to EJ. And basketball crowds are interesting, Zach. I didn't want to kind of get your take on this. I think that college basketball crowds are more intimidating than NBA basketball crowds. And I think part of the reason is because it doesn't cost a grand and a half to sit on the floor.
Yeah, that, and who's sitting on the floor? Fucking Kim Kardashian? Like, who is she yelling at? Like, she's just there to show off her outfit and show off that fucking goofy bitch Pete Davidson. Like,
wait, can we talk about Skeet for Pete Davidson for one sec?
Oh, sure.
Okay. So while all the stuff in the world that was important was happening, Kanye West sent his enormous fan base to Pete Davidson's Instagram, and they were all calling him Skeet Davidson in the comments, and they were telling him to seek God, and Pete Davidson deleted his Instagram because of it.
See, I'll be honest, man. Kanye is everyone knows he's absolutely clinically insane, but what he's doing is abusive. I mean, he is manipulative, abusive, like to Pete, to Kim, like it is entirely, I mean, it's abuse what he's doing, and he's lost his mind. And even if you like Kanye's music, I can't imagine you being a part of this, right? Like seeing that Kim, obviously, I mean, this motherfucker tried to run for president. Like he is so far gone mentally, and it's terrifying. Honestly, it's dangerous. Like,
and he has such a cult following, Zach. I was gonna say, they raided Pete.
I think Kanye would ever do anything. Because, but I guess, how would you ever know until they do something, right? But he has a cult following and all these calls to action, like something bad could happen. And Kanye 100% would be to blame. And honestly, I mean, I don't know who can influence Kanye, but he needs mental help. I mean, he needs serious help.
No, so, Zach, he's too big for it. The issue with once you get that big, if you are clinically insane, is no one can tell you anything, Zach.
Right. Now, like, on the other side of this, the fact that Kim Kardashian's with somebody like Pete Davidson, or God help us, Megan Fox is engaged to Machine Gun Kelly. Like, you see a picture of them at that basketball game, you're looking at it like, this is what's fucking wrong with America. This absolute smoke show, 11 out of 10, is with fucking Machine Gun Kelly, with fucking like shit pierced everywhere, like he was wearing a woman's like dress. Mm-hmm. It's like, what the fuck is wrong with this world? Like, this is the power couple. Like, Machine Gun Kelly looks like an absolute methed out train wreck.
And like, isn't the one sister with Travis Barker? He just looks like a bald.
Similar.
Yeah, they're all with that same style, skinny white guy, never worked out a day in their life, like never anything. And just,
yeah, just
it's gross. I want to get back to sports though. I'm about to throw
please,
up.
Please do.
I did want to ask you though, do you think some college basketball crowds can get more hostile than college football crowds? Or is that
Yeah, I mean, so no, I mean, if you want to talk about the hostility of a crowd, I mean, the top 10 are going to be college football stadiums. The difference is the intimacy, right? College football, they're even the stadiums that are built right on top of the sideline, they're still a distance away, right? You're still wearing equipment. Like, it's not near as intimate. So, I mean, a group of 100 people at a basketball game that want to be rambunctious and intimidating, it's going to feel far more impactful because they're right there. You have nothing on. You're face to face. You could see them, right? They're like, throw a beer at you. It's definitely going to soak your clothes, right? In a college football game, I mean, they throw a beer, that thing dissipates. You might get a couple drops on you. Like, it's just not as intimate in a football space just because of the nature of the facility, right?
I just think of the college football villains, and you know, when J.J. Redick was at Duke, especially when they would go places and like you know, they would chant his sister's name, tell him how much they effing hated him, and he said he would hear every single word like very clearly.
Yeah. Because and that's the other thing, right? There's only five guys to worry about. Like, if Braxton Miller's playing against you, obviously you're going to know Braxton, but like, can he ever hear you? There's 100,000 people screaming. Like, even if you start a chant, it's like, it's hard to hear. And also, yeah, like, there's no intimate disrespect going on. Like, it's not like, you know, I'm right here looking at you, Chris, and I could talk shit to you and you hear it. And then you know, this is very intimate, right? Whereas in a football stadium, like, the noise keeps it from being intimate, and the stadium build, like the infrastructure, or not infrastructure, but you know, the layout of stadiums in the sport just doesn't allow for such intimate shit talking, basically.
You know, I agree with that. I think that NFL games and like college football games, of course, I think that the crowd noise is more impactful to a team just because it's tougher to operate under noise. But I will say, I think in college basketball, especially, the proximity can take a specific player more out of their game, because it's not about them hearing calls and you know, feeling away. It's more about like them getting emotional, upset about things. Like, we saw, you know, Spike Lee used to make ESPN every single week for being very up close and personal and saying stuff to you. And there's like been sideline altercations all the time and with stuff like that. I mean, Mouse of the Palace is kind of an example of, you know, proximity getting, you know, being too much. So I was just curious about that. I absolutely love college basketball around this time of year. You can start to feel the ramp up in home crowds.
Oh, and this is when I start watching.
Yeah.
This is when I start watching, because I'm not a huge fan. I watch Ohio State, you know, most of the time, just because I'm in Columbus and obviously I love Ohio State. But outside of that, I'll pay attention to rankings. Like, Aaron Torres is a big college basketball guy and that I really like his content. So I'll check out what he's saying, because he usually has a good beat on the national landscape. And I don't know. It just, this time of year is when it's fun. I mean, I'm already making plans for March Madness. Like, that, I'm telling you right now, we might have to do a morning show from a sports bar or something, because I'm gonna be getting ready on Thursday and Friday, and that first weekend. And obviously we have our March Madness stuff going on. We're gonna do a March Madness squares where you can win every game, 64 games or something like that in total. And
we're doing the bracket challenge.
And then we're doing the bracket challenge, right? I think $20 buy-in, and winner takes half. The other half goes to our charitable benefits. And all the charity work we're doing. So yeah, then we got a bunch going on for March Madness. But outside of that shit, it's just fucking, it's the best sporting event. It really is. It is insanity. Like, the upsets, the Cinderellas, like the intensity, the last second, you know, game deciding shots.
The overnight celebrities. It's overnight celebrities for me.
Yeah.
The one, like, guy, the sixth man on the bench, the, you know, the white guy that's a sharpshooter, the black guy with the game saving block. Like, it takes over. The whole world stops, it feels like, in this
place. It is. And it's like and the acronyms come out, right? Like, the initials take over, like the UMBCDFAE. Like, all of a sudden they're in the Sweet 16. You're like, what the fuck is a UMBCFDB?
The WTF UFCT,
right?
Tech.
Loyola Chicago. And you're like, damn, this is fucking wild. But Florida FGCU, Florida Gulf Coast, was in that thing one time. I mean, it's crazy. It's crazy.
No, it's insane, and I absolutely love it. I do want to flip to football for a little bit, just real quickly. I want to ask you about this time of year, Zach, because you coached at a high level for a long time. And I want to know, this time of year for you, did you spend it more watching recruiting tape, or how much time a day did you spend watching recruiting tape? Or was this more about a time to get you and your team, like, to polish yourself as a football coach?
Yeah, I mean, you got to think, right now they're about, what, probably about a month out from spring ball. So you're really trying
Michigan started really early. Like, Michigan already started their spring ball.
which is really bizarre. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. You kind of you just limited your entire winter off season. So this is all about development right now. And honestly, outside of the summer, I mean, season's great, but you know, when it comes to developing players, there is this month right here, really 2 months, right? It's that kind of mid-January to mid-March, a two-month window, and then that post-spring 2 months until training camp where you can really develop guys. Because you think about it, you don't have a ton of time in practice, right? You have maybe 15 minutes of individual drills. That's not a lot. You're coaching 12, 14 guys, so it's hard to give it individual attention. You're also trying to install plays, teach football IQ, defenses. You're trying to teach all this stuff in spring and correct mistakes to try to develop guys that you don't have a chance to really one-on-one break a kid down fundamentally and work on things that he needs to improve at. So this is your time. I mean, you're out there like right now, Brian Hartline is taking Marvin Harrison Jr. on the field one-on-one and, you know, working on stuff like working on his own personal weaknesses that he can't do with the whole group because then Emeka Egbuka is wasting his time. Like, and whatever that
different,
may be.
Different weaknesses. Yeah.
Yeah. Everyone has different strengths and different weaknesses. Like Jaxon Smith-Njigba needs an entirely different plan than Marvin Harrison Jr. So you have to make individualized plans. And these are the 2 months where you can do that. Right. And so it's my favorite time of year because it's where you really like, there's no cameras, there's no articles, there's no press conferences. 11 Warriors isn't writing any bullshit about your players. Like there's none of that going on. All it is me and my guy trying to make him better. And it's just an awesome, awesome time of year. There's a lot of recruiting going on, a lot of recruiting film being watched. That all is true, but a lot of that's kind of on your own time. You'll have some recruiting staff meetings where you might watch some film as a staff, but it's really about development of your players. Recruiting is pretty much done on your own time outside of those, you know, designated recruiting staff meetings. It's just like you watch recruiting film at home. You watch recruiting film early in the morning before work. I mean, that's really what you do. That's why I've said it before. You know, staff meetings start at 7, but your ass better be in here at 5:45 because you got other shit you got to get done that you're not going to have time for throughout the day.
Nick, shout out Nick with a really good question. I'm going to put it up on the screen. Knowles, I didn't know this. Knowles said he wanted to have more team drills than position drills. What do you prefer? And kind of explain the difference between those two.
Well, you got to get your work done as a position group. But that doesn't mean that in practice you need to do a bunch of position drills. I mean, I actually didn't like individual during practice. I mean, there were some good drills I did. I mean, but there's so much going on at practice that I think individual development is done pre-practice, post-practice, and outside of practice. And also coaching off of practice film and in practice during those drills. So I'm great with them. My favorite drills, you know, I would always push to get away from just the receivers going over here and doing 10 minutes of cone drills or some bullshit like that. Like if we're going to work on blocking, let's make it a competitive blocking drill against the DBs. Like why work on blocking against a scout team guy or my intern or, you know, or a difference pad. Like we can do that pre-practice to kind of just get those reps of hand placement. Warm, yeah. We can do it pre-practice. And then we get to practice. Let's do it live and competitive. Let's do a team drill. Let's do it like, and really get better. Cause that's how you get better at it, right? Game reps, as opposed to those practice reps you could do before practice. You could do after practice, right? You could do, there was like a pre-practice pseudo period where they haven't stretched yet. So it's not full speed. It's not technically a part of practice, but you had 10 minutes to kind of work with your guys and do something. You know what I mean?
You know, competing against guys that want to beat you, I think is so important.
Yeah. It's important to get game reps at game speed against good people.
Because when you don't, then you get like the receivers that kind of look really good in those Instagram workouts with those Instagram coaches with the cones and stuff. And then we've seen it before. They get to like a Senior Bowl and try to do one of those trendy cone drill routes against
the cone. Yeah. It's like Instagram. You know, everyone has those hexagon things, hexagon things you put down to like do a bunch of feet through. And then they throw those sticks at them with the three different colors and yell red. And it's like, boom, they go like that. And it's like, man, now you're going to catch a touchdown. Like what the fuck does that have to do with football?
It's interesting
because I, you know what?
I hate that shit.
Well, I hate it too, but I'm still a sucker for it because I'm over here. I started training kids and I'm building this Zone 6 platform, which is going to be an athlete development platform. So I'm not going to just let things like that exist without trying them out and seeing what I actually think of them because I don't want to be that old school guy that, you know, development passes me by because I'm not working the game still. But Helix sticks or whatever they're called. Mm-hmm. They're awful. I still, I, there's so many, so I don't understand what they do, and I'm not trying to make this a, football.
No, let's talk for the football nerds. It's Friday. I'm a little tipsy.
Like when you talk about catching a football, right? Ball reception, hand-eye coordination, all that stuff. Like there are so many ways that you can, because what is it trying to do? That little stick with three colors. It's trying to get you to lock in laser focus on what you're trying to catch and have your hand associate where you need to go and get your hand there, right? Hand-eye coordination.
Yeah, it's like hand-eye coordination and kinesthetic awareness.
Yeah. And it's focus, right? Mm-hmm. It's really focus. But there's so many ways to train that without throwing some stupid three-prong stick that has nothing to do with the fundamental skill of catching a football, baseball, or basketball. Like your hand placement, your movement, like the grip, the grab, none of that equates to either of those three sports. So there's like, my thing has always been write numbers on the football or use tennis balls or my big thing now is lacrosse balls because it's still that same movement of catching the ball, right? If you write numbers on them, they still have to focus their vision through the catch and train their eye discipline to catch the ball. And now they're catching a football or something, you know, it's simulating a real catch. So yeah, you could get me on a tangent forever. Like I can't stand shit like that. Those little hexagon things, like they're good for plyometrics, but not it's not football training. Don't take those hexagons out and set up this honeycomb and do some footwork drill and call it wide receiver training or DB training. It's not.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because I generally agree with you on that. I've been around a lot of basketball players and like a lot of basketball trainers and guys like to take credit for guys' success and they have these little drills. And one thing I learned from Jerome Lane Sr., you know who that is? He shattered the backboard at Pitt. That's who that is. One thing I learned from him was he was kind of explaining to me the difference between like these Instagram workouts and the kind of way things are. One of the things he talked about was guys, these are used to be a tool. They're supposed to be used as a tool to get better at something else. The issue is that people look to get good at the drill. And then when someone just gets good at a drill, it doesn't actually end up applying to football.
You got to play football, man. You got to play a sport. Like you want to get better at being a receiver, you got to run routes and you got to run routes against DBs. And that's one of the things, shoot, I've been working out like crazy the last 3 weeks because I gotta make sure I'm in better shape because, you know, I'm going there and I've done it with, you know, one-on-ones against DBs. I've done training sessions like that, but ultimately then, you know, DBs have bad fundamentals and they don't give the look I want for the receiver. And so I end up having to play DB against these kids and, you know, the kids that I'm training right now, The high school level kids are good players. And so it takes every year.
Hey, can I come? Can I come?
Yeah.
Try to D up one of these kids?
Yeah, come on.
I need to train him for your son. No, dead ass. Like, I guess.
Yeah. Saturday morning, 8:30 every week. Like we go to two groups, 2 hours over at Plus Two, 8:30 a.m. Saturday morning. If anyone's interested, reach out because I train about five or six kids at a time.
I'll come play DB against these little suckers.
Come on, hey, bro, you're going to get cooked, Chris. Cooked.
You're not cooking shit. It's not Thanksgiving. All right,
we'll see. I got a couple that'll dog you. I'm just telling you.
Dog me.
But anyways.
Anyway, back
to my
it.
Thoughts on, that's just my thoughts on Instagram trainers and athlete development. But a question came up here, and I think it's a good question from Spencer. Yeah. Who has a better season this year? Texas A&M, and USC. Let's rank them 1 to 3.
Do you want me to go first or you got
it? You go ahead and go first.
Better season. So I have USC having the best season, and my reasoning for that is I think that there's only two losses on their schedule. I firmly believe they win the division. I mean, that they win the Pac-12, and I think of the three, you know, quarterback play and offense kind of runs college football. And I firmly believe of those three teams, they will have the best quarterback, at least the most proven quarterback. Obviously, it's you got to wait and see about Quinn Ewers. I think he's going to be a good quarterback, but I don't know if yet. And then I will go Texas next, and then Texas A&M. I think Texas wins their conference as well. I think Oklahoma takes a significant step backwards. I think Quinn is going to be good enough. I like Xavier Worthy a lot. I think they have the talent, and I really trust Sark in year two, and they have the best running back. A&M, they might be a better team than the other two. They might be able to beat the other two. In fact, if they were on the field against each other, I would assume that A&M would be the favorite. The issue with A&M is that they're going to have to play UGA and Bama if they kind of run the table. And so I think that they will lose one and then maybe lose two more. I think the SEC is going to be really, really good next year. But I do think Texas A&M in 2023 is going to be a very, very good team.
Yeah, I agree. I think A&M's a year away. And the problem right now for A&M, A&M's the best team of the three. The three teams listed right best there. Team. A&M is by far the best of the three.
Better season. Better season was the
right question. They would beat Texas and USC. They would if they played next year. That's first and foremost. But the problem they have is they got to go through Tuscaloosa, right? They have to play Alabama. The road to the SEC championship game runs through Nick Saban country. And Bryce Young coming back, he's going to be a problem. Just like CJ Stroud, those kids that had those ridiculous years this past year are only going to come back stronger and better. They're getting Bama already has transfer help on the way, right? They got the kid from LSU, Elias Ricks, right? They got the receiver from Georgia. And the portal season's not over yet. There's going to be, and I was looking at kind of when the portal pops off, what months, and there's a huge spike December, January, right? Those are all the kids leaving after the season. And then it has a dramatic decline until right after spring ball. It has like a medium spike, and then it dies back down until August when training camp starts. So Bama's not done yet filling their roster. And so I think Texas A&M is going to struggle to be good enough to compete with Bryce Young and Bama. And I think after Bryce Young leaves this year, with the talent that A&M's brought in, 2023 is a year where it's a wide open race, right?
So they're going to have a really scary roster, and it's crazy because in 2023, Zach, they're going to have the highest percentage of five stars on the roster, maybe, probably, at least freshmen and sophomores, then Bama. And that'll be the first time that eclipse happens.
For sure. And so that being said, I'm gonna flip A&M in Texas. I think Texas is the problem I have with Texas is the quarterback uncertainty, right? I know Quinn Ewers is supposed to be really good, but I'm not sold. You're not gonna sell me on Quinn Ewers until he stops with kombucha fucking ads and starts playing actual football. The shit he pulled with Ohio State transferring and all this other bullshit, I don't believe that he has it up here and right here to be a great quarterback. And it's not that I don't believe that he has it. It's that he hasn't proven that he has it. Why? Because he threw the ball well in high school. There's been a million of those. Jamarcus Russell threw the ball well in high school and college and was fucking awful, right? So you're not going to tell me that Quinn Ewers is going to be great. I know Sark. I mean, on my show, I put out Steve Sarkisian is the number one quarterback developer in college football. And I still believe that. But you're not going to sell me that Quinn Ewers is that guy.
I am also going to flip Texas A&M and Texas in my rankings. I forgot Texas actually plays Alabama week two.
Yeah, that's going to be a problem game right there. But I just think Texas isn't there yet. I think Quinn Ewers could become a great player. He's going to be a year away. He didn't even really get reps last year at Ohio State because of the way he came in and bypassed his senior year, whatever, skipped it, left early for college. So I'm gonna go. USC 1, A&M 2, Texas 3, because I think that the situation at quarterback and then the landscape, the schedule is going to be problematic. And I think Lincoln Riley still, he has a lot of work to do. I mean, I know they got Caleb Williams, but that USC team was not just a quarterback away, right? They weren't just a quarterback away from being a Pac-12 champ team or a relevant team nationally. So he's got work to do, but it's obvious that he's working the portal and worked in recruiting and they will get that team right. But like I said, A&M's the best of the three, but I think USC has a better season than A&M.
I have another question, Zach. I want to stay on Texas and Quinn Ewers. If you are Sark, even if Quinn Ewers you think is ready, would you wait till after that Bama game to trot him out there? I mean, this basically is his true freshman season. Let's be honest.
I mean, you just got to go with the best player, right? The best.
Do you
the best
really?
Player I mean, quarterback. If you're, I mean, if you don't have to. A lot of people haven't, right? You look at like Braxton Miller. You look at Terrell Pryor. I mean, they came in and they didn't really get going until week three or four, but it's just. You have to. The kid needs experience, and he might not need the experience.
The Bama thing is crazy, though, man. Bama week two.
Yeah, I mean it's going to be tough, but what better way to learn from it, right?
No, I mean, if you trot Quinn Ewers out there on a blowout against ULM, that's fine, and then you want to start him against Alabama. Why don't you let whoever's the quarterback take the L there, and then you give Quinn Ewers UTSA, Texas Tech, West Virginia to get ready for Oklahoma.
I mean, I guess it's just it depends on the mental makeup of the kid, right? Let's talk about
the mental makeup of the kid because he skedaddled.
Yeah, well, there's no doubt. But if he can't handle going into Bama week two, what makes you think he's going to be able to handle Oklahoma week seven? Like he'll have a little bit more experience, but that'll, in my opinion, that adversity will expose the true competitive nature of the quarterback, right? If he doesn't level up against Bama, or if he doesn't take the L on the chin, take his mistakes, and it pisses him off and he grinds to become a better player so it never happens again, he's not my quarterback. If I'm a Longhorn, he's not my guy. If we have to baby and coddle Quinn Ewers and protect him from big old Nick Saban, then he's not your fucking alpha. He's not your guy. Find somebody who's like, fuck that. I want Bama. Bring that bitch in my house. Like, bring him in. I want to go. Like, if he's not that guy, then he's not your guy. So
I think there's no way. If I'm Quinn Ewers, I am asking Sark not to put me in that game. Just straight up.
Well, you're a beta then.
Big beta in this bitch. I'm not an idiot.
Fuck that.
The last thing I want to see is about Will Joe Anderson Burrow.
You think Joe Burrow ever would have been like, I don't know, I don't think we're ready for Bama. Let's just wait next year. I think we can get him play McPherson or some fucking or Johnny, Zach, Johnny Appleseed.
I'm only going to say this once. I'm not Joe Burrow. Joe Burrow has enormous dick energy. I'm just Chris from Akron. And I will sit center bench. It is no problem. Y'all go ahead and take that. I'll be right here.
See, Chris, is it right here?
Man.
This is why Chris is not a hometown hero.
You know what? You're right. And I'm going to own that shit, man.
It is what it is, Chris.
I'm just saying, like, the last thing I want to see if I'm Quinn Ewers, I haven't played football in a year, Will Anderson on a zero blitz coming right up the middle.
Yeah.
Like, we've both seen Quinn Ewers. He's got the blonde mullet with the frost tips. You think he's really going to take that shot?
Hey, no, I mean, I'm not sold on him. So, I'm built a little different when it comes to the quarterback position. You know, like people were jerking off CJ Stroud after week three, when I'm sitting here like, no, he got to show me something. Now he did. He showed me something down the stretch, but I'm not going to sell on a kid that can throw a pretty pass. Like, I've been there before. That shit, it doesn't matter. I mean, it does. It's important that they can. But just because the kid throws a pretty ball doesn't mean he's a competitive quarterback that can go win you a championship. And that's what we're talking about, right? Mm-hmm. We're talking about winning a championship. Can Quinn Ewers throw pretty passes and throw some touchdowns? Yeah. Can he go win you a fucking game? That's the question I have. Same for CJ Stroud. CJ Stroud throws pretty passes. Like, he beat the shit out of Utah, an inferior opponent, right? But can CJ Stroud go win you a fucking championship? That's the question. And it's not answered. I don't give a shit what his stats said. I don't care how good you think he is, Buckeye Nation. He has not proven if he can go win a championship. Go win a big-ass fucking game. He's 0-1 in the rivalry, let's not forget. So he's got a lot to prove still. Now, is he a great talent? Absolutely. Does he have the tools in the toolbox to be a great player? Absolutely. Is he one nut right now? Abso-fucking-lutely not. He's got so much to figure out in here that it's yet to be seen. Now, I'm hopeful. I'm rooting for him. I want him to be, but he's not. He ain't proved shit yet.
Mm-mm. It's funny because he has, like, kids really pretty mechanics, and it seems to be that the quarterbacks that always have the pretty mechanics and throw the really, really all-time pretty balls are never, like, the true, like warriors. Like, Joe Burrow throws a really good football, but it's not like a pretty ball. It's not like teach tape.
That's honestly what I think made Justin Fields unique, because he did throw a pretty ball. Also, like, it's just demeanor for me. Like, you look at Justin Fields, that motherfucker, square-jawed, serious look, clenching his jaw when he's taking a snap. Like, he is almost angry.
Like, takes a hit and gets better. Like,
yeah, like you hit him, he's pissed at you, and he's like, all right, bitch, I'm coming right back at you. Like, that's what I look for. And Justin Fields had it. I don't see it in CJ Stroud yet. That's all Mickey Marotti's been doing all offseason, is beating his dick in just so he can fucking develop go through some adversity and develop some toughness. But Cali Kid, man, I don't know. I don't know about Cali Kids.
Yeah, I need CJ to go from Sunflower CJ to Big CJ in his bitch. Like, for real. Like,
and it's got to be.
I need a warrior.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's got to be real. No, it can't be like one little run and he's like, stands up to like a tough guy. Like, no, I need to see you. Like, I need you to step, like, run somebody over, step on their throat, like, piss on their mama and call their daddy a bitch. You know what I mean? Like, I need some real gangster out of you. Like, I need some real toughness.
Man, if someone pisses on my mama, I'm going to jail. No doubt. Anyway.
No doubt. But guess what? That alpha would come out. Mm-hmm. What I'm talking about. I need to see that alpha. Come on.
Let me just pour it up a little bit. Someone had a really good question, Zach. I don't know how long you want to go, because I'll keep you forever. But someone wanted to talk about, ask a question. Who do you think is better, Travion Henderson or Bijan Robinson?
I think Travion Henderson. I think Bijan was better last year.
Mm-hmm.
he's a year older. And I think so that's natural. I mean, you have to remember, Travion Henderson was a true freshman. He's a high school body. He didn't play his senior year. Like, to compare them is not apples to apples. It's apples to oranges. Bijan Robinson had been in college for a full year before Travion. So I think Bijan had was a better player this past year. But Travion showed you that he's potentially could be the best back in the country this year.
Yeah.
And he might be the best back. The most talented back. How about this? He might be the most talented back to ever play at Ohio State. And that is insane to say, right? You're talking about Ezekiel Elliott, Eddie George, Archie Griffin. I mean, some absolute Beanie Wells. I mean, just J.K. Dobbins. But Travion Henderson is different. He's just different. And you watch what that sumbitch looks like after a year with Mickey Marotti. This ain't a true freshman anymore. His body's changing. I talked to Tony Alford on Saturday. His body has changed. He's more explosive. He's learned the game more. Like, he went from being a high school kid that, you know, started as a role player, worked his way into being the starter, to now he's the fucking dude. He is the guy. Him and Mayan are 1-2 punching this motherfucker, and they're getting coached, developed, and trained. And he's going to be something to watch out for this year.
Most talented back ever at Ohio State. And, I mean, I was trying to come up with someone, and I don't think I can. Like, I think he's probably better top end speed than JK. He's got as much shake as JK if he wants to. I think early in the season, or actually later in the season, I think he tried to go about running over people instead of making people miss. Man, he's really fucking good, Zach. Like, he's really fucking good.
I mean, he's probably the most dynamic playmaker out of the backfield that Ohio State's had. I mean, it's hard to put him ahead of Zeke or Eddie, obviously Archie was a different era of football and won two Heismans. That's going to be hard to compete with ever, but he's a different, more dynamic player out of the backfield that, more make you miss, that burst and explosion. And I think those three are the best three though. I think Travion will end his career. It'll be a conversation about Travion, Eddie George, and Zeke as the best three running backs, you know, post Archie Griffin. No one's ever going to, you can't ever top Archie Griffin. He won two Heismans. Mm-hmm. It was a different era of football. It's hard to even compare the two or him to any of those kids. But I think
all your shot right now, if with Justin Fry, does he go over 2K yards this year?
Well, he should. The issue is going to be Ryan loves to throw the ball, and they have CJ Stroud. CJ Stroud's going to, you know, whether he's what I just described, that competitive, dominant quarterback that wins a championship or not, he's still going to be an improved version of himself. So he's going to be better at throwing the ball, which is scary because he threw the ball extremely well last year. So they're still going to throw the ball a shit ton. And if Mayan Williams is healthy, he deserves to be featured in this offense a little bit. And he will, right? Tony Alford is not just going to roll Travion for 30 carries a game. Like, that's just not going to happen.
Yeah, could he want to keep him fresh anyway. So.
Yeah. So I, you know me, I'm not a stat watcher. I'm not a stat chaser. I don't give a shit what his stats are. I just want to watch him play, and I'll evaluate player to player. I hate looking at stats because of what I just said. You got another back that's great, right? So Mayan might take some of those carries because he's a different style back and he deserves it. And he makes the offense more multiple and dynamic. So could he be a 2000 yard back? Absolutely. Could he have 2,500 all purpose yards? Absolutely. He is that talented. And at most places he probably would. But at Ohio State, it's not about that. He'll have an impact like a Zeke, like a JK, and like an Eddie George. I think that is what he will have.
In terms of, you know, skill set, do you think he has a skill set to return kicks? Would you put him back there?
Absolutely. But it's just, for whatever reason, it's not the style, right? Ryan, it's not Ryan's style. It wasn't Urban's style. But Saquon Barkley did it for
That's my next question. Penn
State, I mean, it was like, holy shit, do you really want to kick it to him? Right?
Yeah.
And the way kickoff return is now, I mean, it's I don't know. I see both sides of the argument. You don't want to get your premier back hurt on a kickoff return for what? But he'd be a game breaker.
Yeah. I want to address this, Zach. How do you keep Mayan, Marcus Crowley, and Evan Pryor happy? Here's what I think. I don't think it fucking matters.
You don't.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. It doesn't.
You ain't worried about keeping happy.
Players happy is more of a fans thing, because at the end of the day, if a kid is generational, kids transfer. That's just how it is.
Yeah, and it is what it is, right? You're going to keep Mayan happy because Mayan's going to play. Marcus Crowley and Evan Pryor are probably going to have to transfer, right? Because Travion Henderson.
Evan Pryor's a really good back. Like, I'm not saying
he's going to transfer. He might be able to be that two punch once Mayan leaves, or, you know, whatever. But Travion Henderson's here for two more seasons. Like, there, it's not like, okay, one more year and then I can be the guy. No, no, no. It's two more years and then I can be the guy. And then I'm, what, a junior or a senior if you're Marcus Crawley. Like, eh, I don't know. And I don't know about
portal,
that.
With the portal being so accessible, I don't blame him. But I think, you know, I think one of the big things that fans get caught up in is keeping guys committed to Ohio State happy. And it doesn't matter. Because at Ohio State, more than any other place outside of, like, you know, Bama's and stuff like that, the goal every year is to win the national title. And if you want to win the national title, you play your best players. And like Nick Saban is daring kids to transfer, you do not worry about that if you're Ohio State.
Here's
the thing. At Ohio State, you should be able to go get the best player and then play the best player. And it should be a revolving door behind him. It doesn't even matter at this point.
So is that, I know what your point is. And I think I agree that is the goal. But can that really be your goal if you've only done it 5% of the time the last 20 years? Right. If you've only won one national championship in the last 20 years, are we just bad at reaching our goal? Like, it's one of the two, okay. Right? I know that that's the standard. I get it. It's Ohio State. Excellence is the standard. But are we on the verge of actually making that standard a consistent reality? Or is that something that just, it's like, yeah, we're still trying to do that, but so much needs to happen to get there and do it. Like, shouldn't the goal be make the playoffs and then make a run at it?
So for me, if your goals, or at least personally, like in my work experience, if your goals shouldn't match what you've done, your goals should match what you want to do. That's why it's mm-hmm. a goal. And so I think that winning the Big Ten can't be a goal because it's done so easily.
No, they can't. Like
for me in radio, it's like waking up and putting Rover, putting whoever to shame, you know, cracking a mic. That's not my goal every day. My goal is to be the best fucking DJ in the area. And I think with Ohio State, it's got to be your goal has to be to win a national title. And the fact of the matter is that you couldn't do if you've only done that one time in the last X amount of years, that means you've done a bad job at getting to your goal. Your goal should be more potential driven. If Ohio State has the potential to win a national title, that has to be your goal. And if it's not, then you're doing something wrong, because if you have the potential to hit something and you're not hitting it, and so you lower your goal because of it, that means you're
a failure.
So that's where I'm at with that.
Yeah, that's not happening, right? The goal is to win a national title. My point is, I think, is just that we got to get it done, right? We got to get there.
This is the year. It has to
happen. It has to happen this year. And as much as Urban is regarded as a great football coach at Ohio State, and you know we won a national championship. I think honestly, his tenure was not a failure, but it
left a lot to be desired.
Yeah, it wasn't maximized. I mean, there should have been at least two national championships in the time that he was there. I would say more, but 14, some decisions at quarterback.
Sure. 14, 15 for sure should have been.
Yeah, some decisions at quarterback, decisions at coordinator. I mean, just decisions cost national titles. And I think we're there also with Ryan. I mean, I'm not saying they could have won it this past 2 years, but the decision at defensive coordinator made it not impossible. It wasn't going to happen, right? And so this is the year. It has to happen this year. New defense, you know, this knight in shining armor came in, and the defensive coordinator.
He's gangster, dude. He's so gangster.
Yeah, I really like him. I really like him. Just from what I've seen and what I've heard from people inside the building, I think he's going to be that dude. And it's going to be tough.
He gives me the vibes like he plays chess with a gun on his hip. Like, that's just what it feels like to me. I love him. I do want to ask you about Ryan Day, though. Kind of one of the last thing on the notes that I had was, you know, Ryan Day's not a finished product. This is his first head coaching gig, which, to be honest, is insane because Ohio State is a destination job. And he's not obviously a finished product as a coach. What do you want to see from him improvement-wise? Because a lot of times people trip out a little bit and think he's a finished product, and he's not. Like, he needs.
Well, no one is, right? If you consider yourself a finished product, the game's going to pass you by and you're going to become stale. But I honestly think he's doing exactly what he needs to do. Like, I said it, you know, about end of the season before any moves were made, he needed a clean house on defense, bring in a new defensive coordinator. He needed to get a new O-line coach, because what I watched, the development from the O-line and the run game, was just not up to par. He made all the moves. And then I think there's the one thing that I think needs to happen, and I need to follow up, because I don't know, maybe they've pivoted in the last, you know, what has it been, 6 months since I last talked to people about this, is the off-season program, the sports science aspect of development. I think Alabama is whooping Ohio State's ass in that department. And so I think they need to pivot and have a sports science approach while not getting away from what makes Mickey Marotti the best in the country is that toughness, adversity, the energy, the heartbeat of the team, the pulse of the team, the leadership. I think if they can just add that element, that'll level Ohio State up. And now you'll be talking about a potential Bama-esque run where they're in it every year, win it every other year. And it's really, truly building a dynasty. And I think that's the one thing that I think they can improve on.
Is Zach calling a passing of the torch if they get the sports science figured out from Nick Saban to Ryan Day?
I mean, it could be. I mean, and then ultimately it's about recruiting at a high level, right? Well, here's what we don't know right now. I mean, I do because I know Justin, but we don't know. We don't have proven results that Justin Fry could be the best recruiting O-line coach in the country. I think he is and will be, but you know, it's not proven yet. These defenses, the defensive staff hasn't even started, right? Mm-hmm. They are just now getting their feet wet recruiting at this level. I mean, guys coming in from Cincinnati and the Jaguars and Oklahoma State, like this shit ain't Oklahoma State. This ain't Cincinnati. Like you got to go beat Nick Saban on recruits. So there's a lot to be seen. And then I saw Brian Schottenstein announced that the 501c3 got approved for the foundation with Cardale. So that's going to be the next piece of it, right? Can they really, can they enter the arms race? I mean, there's so many things that need to happen for Ohio State. And that's getting back to my point, like, is it realistic to say Ohio State's goal is to win a national title? It's like, well, your goal can be to win a national title, but are you actually taking the steps and doing the things you need to do to win it? Right. And that's the question. So are they, we don't know yet. I mean, I got to see this 501c3 operate. I want to see what kind of slush fund we build. I want to see how these defensive coaches recruit. I want Justin Fry to prove me right and go get five stars all over the O-line nationally, coast to coast. If that happens, yeah, Ohio State's right there ready for the torch. Now, and ain't nobody passing the torch, Chris. Nick Saban's not passing the torch to Ryan Day. Ryan Day's got to go in that motherfucker, masked up, gun in his face, and take that torch out of Nick Saban's house. Ain't nobody be just handing it to him. It's mugging season. You want the torch? You better go take that motherfucker.
Exactly. Get up and go watch and go take. Man, I'm telling you right now, Zach, I follow recruiting very, very closely. I've checked up on a couple things. Like, I'm going to tell you like this. Justin Fry's going to land 2 5 stars.
I know he is.
Like soon. And after that, I only want him referred to as Big Justin Fry in this bitch. Because he's going to land those 5 stars. I mean, it's going to be so, it's going to be such.
Can we call him Supersize?
Supersize me Fry, man. Fuck
yeah. Supersize Fry.
That's what, I mean, Supersize Fry, word up.
He's bringing in those big time recruits. I'm with
it. It's gonna be night and day from Stud. Also on Stud, did you see he was a finalist for the Georgia job?
I've had Georgia fans in my DMs ever since it was announced. Like, what do you think about Stud as an O-line coach? And listen, I like Stud a lot, but I don't know how you could win a national championship and get fired up about hiring a guy that just got fired from a team that didn't make the playoffs. Like, I don't know. It's just like,
can I answer this one for the Georgia fans out there?
Sure. Sure.
Hey, that's a great hire, y'all. Go Bulldogs. I hope Georgia Tech stings you in the ass next year. Oh, goodness gracious.
Oh, yeah. It's, I mean, honestly, good for Stud. And it'd be an opportunity to get new life. And here's what happens as coaches sometimes. You get in a rut at a place, or you kind of get in a groove at a place, and you need new life. You need new fresh air. You need a new spot Greg Sarra was not a bad football coach.
No, not a bad. I was just overreacting.
No, but I mean, he coached at LSU. When he came into Ohio State, he did an unbelievable job. If you really look at what he was given versus what he left, talent wise and performance wise, so he's still a good football coach, and it might just be a different dynamic that he needs to get back to, I don't know, the successful coaching ways. Like being,
I think the Georgia run is come to an end already, man, because I think they lost things that they can't replace. And I expect them to take a massive step backwards because I don't think they're committed to keeping up with the arms race in terms of quarterback play.
And well, so they never have. They never messed up. Mm-hmm. They've never tried. I mean, I don't want to say they've never tried, but they've never been in the quarterback arms race ever. And they need to get in it if they want to play.
Well, they keep dabbling in it. They keep getting these fancy new weapons and the fancy new tech like Justin Fields and then just letting them skate.
There's been a million of them, but I think Georgia needs it. They're not going to have, I mean, honestly, one of the most generational best college defenses we've seen in, I don't know, the last 10, 15 years. I mean, that's not going to happen every year. So you better have good quarterback play. You better be a well-balanced team so that when the defense is, you know, maybe just good, not the most dominant defense we've ever seen, you could still be in the race. And that's where Georgia is going to falter is when they can't stay in the race because they relied on this generational freak, you know, situation where they had just the most ridiculous defense we've ever seen.
Exactly. No, they're going to get replaced by Texas A&M and SEC supremacy here in the next 2 to 3 years. I absolutely guarantee it.
Well, and the other side of it is that someone's got to win the East. Someone has to win the SEC. Right. East. And so will Georgia continue down the path they're on, or will Tennessee is my dark horse to kind of make a run here in the next 5 years.
I want to get Hendon Hooker on the show, man. I like him a lot.
I'm a huge Hendon Hooker fan.
I want to get him on the show.
He announced he's coming back. So I'm not calling shit yet. I'm going to go down and watch a practice, I think. But Tennessee's not this year. Tennessee is my dark horse to become relevant in the East, just in the East, nothing crazy, just in that side, in that division.
No, I hear you. I'm excited. I mean, I think we could get Hendon Hooker versus Jack Miller this year, don't we?
Yeah, we might. If Jack Miller wins the job.
Jack Miller's winning that job, man.
Okay.
Guarantee it. I guarantee it. Already, I guarantee it. No, but I'm excited, man. I would love to get Hendon on the show. I think there's a debate that he probably has the strongest arm in college football next year. Like, he has an absolute cannon.
Well, he for about a quarter and a half moved the ball against Georgia as well or better than anyone. Anybody. Outside of maybe obviously Alabama in the SEC championship game. But yeah, I'm excited about it. But anyways, I've talked too much, Chris.
Oh, spaces today. Are we doing spaces?
Oh, yeah, Twitter spaces, 2 o'clock. Mark it down.
Mm-hmm. 2 o'clock. I'll be there. There'll be the live feed up on YouTube. Everyone in the chat right now, thank you guys for being some chat demons. And definitely, shout out Lee Reed for the super chat.
Absolutely, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Huge shout out. I want to get Hendon on the show. I want to talk a little bit more Tennessee. I think they're one of the more intriguing storylines in the SEC next year. And I'm super excited. So we have spaces coming up. Go follow us on all socials. Go subscribe. We're growing this thing at a really good rate, I think. And the more you guys help us grow, the cooler guests we'll be able to get on here. And we're excited to make this offseason as fun and as short as possible. So thank you all again.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks, everybody. Menace out.